everybody. Welcome to the new edition of Points on the Board. This is your host for the night, Big John. Wonder why I got that nickname. But regardless of that, I am one of those fantasy pioneers you hear others talk about. Yes, an OG in the fantasy industry. And yet, there's somebody even more OG than myself, if you could possibly believe that. I am speaking of none other than the one, the only, the Latino lover of fantasy sports, none other than my good friend, William Del Pilar. And I hope I had the right rolling of the R on that one, William Pilar.
Actually, you're one of the few people who actually get it right. Del Pilar.
Yeah. Pilar.
Yeah, so eventually I grow to go, Del Pilar's fine. But now I'm like, no, it's Del Pilar. We are in a politically correct world, damn it. Do not sit there and, what's the term they say, trigger me.
I'm not going to trigger you. No microaggressions here. None of that snowflake stuff among real men on the show, William. And speaking of such, the show, of course, is all about sports, politics, pop culture, having a good time, the intersection thereof. And by the way, not the intersectionality we talk about with wusses nowadays, William. Old school intersectionality, literally where everything comes to a point. And that's where we want to be. That's the sweet spot of where we want to talk, William. So to that end, let me bring on your foil for the evening. Now, this dude right here, I'm going to bring him on right now. Let's see if I can work this magic with the video, William. Ladies and gentlemen, we are graced with the presence of none other than Dennis Velasco, a good friend of mine going back years, the Bolo Young of fantasy sports, except this guy has more hair than Bolo Young ever did, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Woo! Dennis Velasco, let me give you his credentials, and they are impressive. The editor-in-chief in charge of all the content at nerdfantasysports.com. He's contributed fantasy basketball content to Sports Illustrated, Slam Magazine, The Score, regular NBA Contact, to the Nets Daily, all of them. He is the co-founder or the only founder, perhaps, of Hardcore and Hoops, the dude.
Hardwood and Hollywood.
I screwed that up. Hardwood and Hollywood shows you how old I am. I'm not with it. But Dennis is an original. He's one of the top minds of fantasy basketball, ladies and gentlemen. When he talks hoops, you know you have to listen. Dennis, how you doing tonight?
Feeling great. Great and grateful. Grateful every day.
Grateful every day. Praise Jesus.
Well, not a religious thing, but whatever.
Fair enough. Fair. I try to be nice to everybody. All right, Dennis. Now, listen, here's the thing. We brought you on to talk the trade deadline moves that were in the NBA last week. And more importantly, let's get right to the juicy one. The Nets and the Sixers, intra-divisional trade, very rare this point of the season. Talk to us about Harden for Simmons et al. And what did you make of this trade? What are the implications?
Well, I thought it was a trade that needed to be done from both teams. Ben Simmons hadn't been playing for the Sixers. You know, there's beef there after what happened during last year's playoffs. James Harden just didn't seem to want to play with Brooklyn anymore. So both teams just, well, not got rid of because, you know, there's value there, but they traded away players that did not want to be there. Made a lot of sense to happen. And I think, you know, if you had to pick a winner of of the trade, I would probably say Brooklyn. If you want to think about money and talk about future and whatnot, only because James Harden is 32 years old, Ben Simmons is 25 years old. Ben Simmons has a controlled contract, you know, including this year, for 3 years, whereas James Harden is going to be an unrestricted free agent after this season. Although, as part of the trade, he's opting into his player option next year, which pays him $47 million. So, you know, if you want to think about money and the future, it's the Brooklyn Nets. If you want to talk about now, you know, I would probably give it to the Philadelphia 76ers, but it's this close. Only because now you have James Harden and Joel Embiid on the same team. That pick and roll is going to be literally unstoppable. Because who are you going to guard on that? Are you going to guard Harden? Well, then Joel Embiid's open. Are you going to, like, roll or go out to Joel Embiid? Well, James Harden's open now. So it's going to be tough. You know, plus they have, you know, the better record. They're more primed to make a deep playoff push versus the Nets. So, I mean, both teams win. It's just on how you see it.
Dennis, our audience is both politics and sports. So we're going to have some listeners who aren't as familiar with sports. So give us a little bit of a background regarding both Ben Simmons and James Harden. Take whoever you want first. But we know – well, let's go with James Harden. I was told or read he was a prima donna. But he was so athletic. Whenever he'd take off after a game to go party, he could come back a day and a half later, 2 days later, and still put up 50. Eventually – a superstar in his own right, maybe a little, maybe his head was so big he couldn't fit through a door. But at the end of the day, it was said that he was calling a lot of the shots, ranging not just from players and who he wanted there, but also coaching staff. Can you expound on that and how that relationship went south? And then from there, we'll go to Simmons.
All right. Well, James Harden does not have a big head. He has a big ass beard. I'll tell you that much.
That is true.
And as far as, like, him having any power, that was when he was on the Houston Rockets. It is true. He basically said, okay, let's get Dwight Howard. All right, that didn't work. See ya. Okay, let's get Chris Paul. Nah, that didn't work. See ya. All right, let's get Russell Westbrook. Nah, that didn't work. Okay, see ya. So he was basically calling the shots there. And while he was there, he was, you know, one of the top scorers. No, he was the top scorer, actually. He led the league in scoring, I think, four times. So, you know, he's one of the best offensive players ever. So, you know, he sort of earned that right to do that because it is a superstar league. It just didn't translate into, you know, championships. I think the closest they got was going to the Western Conference Finals, but, you know, that's about it. And, of course, you know,
why is that?
Golden State.
Why is that? Because Michael Jordan had a bit of that same type of attitude, but he was able to bring the championships home. What's the difference between – I don't want you to – you know, I'm not putting you in the spot to compare the two per se, but Michael Jordan embodied greatness. It looks like James Harden embodies a great player, but not necessarily that greatness that delivers championships.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely a difference between I saw this thing called – there's a thing called competitive stamina, right? James Harden doesn't really have that. He hasn't gone far. He's never won a championship. Whereas Michael Jordan, one of the top athletes ever to have the competitive stamina. And by that, I mean, he did whatever it took to win. And then when he won, he wasn't satisfied. He wanted more. Mm-hmm. He wanted to keep going and going and going and going and win as many chips as possible. Now, obviously, with a 6-0 record, you know, in the NBA Finals and getting, you know, NBA Finals MVP in all of them, wow, that competitive stamina just, you know, stands out. But he also had the right role players. You know, he had his star in Scottie Pippen, you know, the sidekick, you know, the Robin to his Batman. And that's what James Harden was looking for, you know, by having all these different, you know, talents and, you know, superstars to whatever degree on the Rockets. It just did not work out because he also didn't have the role players. You know, to win a championship, it's not that easy. You can't just have, you know, great players because it doesn't always work out. You look at, you know, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden. You know, granted, they only played 16 games together, but they didn't win a championship. In the past, you've seen the Lakers do it with Kobe, Shaq, Karl Malone, Gary Payton, even Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, all great talents, but they did not win a championship. You know, there's a certain, like, chemistry and rhythm that a team needs to go as far as they do because you're playing 82 regular season games, and then to win the chip, yeah, I win 16 more. You know what I mean? They get to deal with all the adversity. How do teams cope when they lose? You know what I mean?
Is it possible that where the Bulls were grown through the draft, through a supporting role players, and the other teams you mentioned, you didn't mention the Miami Heat, but I would include them in there too. These were mercenaries brought all together at once, a lot of egos, a lot of, you know, there's not enough basketballs to feed. Do you think that's one thing that separates Jordan and the Bulls? I don't want to get into Jordan and the Bulls, but in the sense of the greatness and Harding bringing the players he wanted in. I mean, he called the shots and got those players in, but still couldn't get it done.
Right. Well, with Jordan, you know, and Scottie Pippen, you know, they did bring in Dennis Rodman. They brought in, like, a Bill Cartwright, who was, like, you know, pivotal for that first three-peat. You know, so it all depends. You need an alpha, right?
Right.
And you need someone that doesn't mind being alpha light or a beta. You know what I mean?
Politics, we know a lot of betas.
Yeah, right. So, you know, if you're talking about, like, a long season and practices where Jordan would completely destroy all of his teammates, not because he was being a dick, but because he wanted to make them better. You know, it's like, match me. Like, I'm here at this level. You're here. I want to bring you up. It wasn't like, I'm up here. You're down here. You know, you know what I mean?
He wanted but it was also that Jordan was a team player too. I think that gets lost in his greatness was, for example, when he moved to point guard, the point guard was injured, his assists went up and his scoring went down because he realized that his role as being the point guard was to dish and to set up plays and to create for others. And also, unlike Harden, Jordan was a genius defensive player. I mean, he was an awesome defender, whereas Harden, like, as much as he gives you offensively, he gives away defensively. So right. When you look at that as a whole, yeah, if you've got a Harden, then who's the stopper to play alongside him? And with the Nets, you didn't have that. And I think, to your point, that's why Ben Simmons might be a better fit for the Nets, right?
Oh, Ben Simmons is a completely better fit, you know. In fact, you know, it's come out recently where when the Nets traded for James Harden, the Philadelphia 76ers were actually going to be a part of a three-team trade. And the Nets were wondering if, instead of James Harden, why don't we trade for Ben Simmons instead? So, you know what? That happened anyway, you know, obviously. Yeah. So, again, Ben Simmons, who plays defense, but
okay. Dennis, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Dennis, real quick, before we get to Ben Simmons, though, what caused the fallout with Houston? I mean, if Harden's this much of a superstar, you just don't trade somebody like that away. What caused the fallout? And from there, what caused the fallout with Brooklyn once he got there?
Well, in Houston, they just weren't going to win it. And James Harden's getting older. He wanted a ring. You know, they're basically in the rebuild mode, you know, with a superstar. James Harden didn't want to be a part of that. So that's the reason why he wanted out of Houston. As far as why he wanted out of Brooklyn, you know, you probably have to ask James Harden, but it comes down to almost the same thing. He didn't think he was going to win a title because Kevin Durant was hurt. Kyrie Irving was half man, half a season, as Charles Barkley said. But also, there are other things coming out where Kyrie Irving would completely destroy James Harden and lock him up, you know, during practices. So James Harden is a great offensive player, but Kyrie Irving was stopping him like nothing. And he actually called him washed. And their relationship was on shaky ground. So,
well, one thing I did read that, as I said earlier, when he was with the Rockets, you know, for example, if they played in Utah, I think you mentioned before, he'd fly out to Vegas. And yeah. He could come back and still drop 50. However, he still was doing that, but he'd come back and couldn't drop 50 anymore. And there were the reports of him being fat and out of shape. How much of that is due to age? And he just, I mean, it sounds like he's blaming his teammates, but it seems like he may have had some deficiencies as well because of age, attitude, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think everybody at some point when they get older, they realize, like, oh, damn, my metabolism is not there anymore. You know, I'm almost half a century year old, right? I mean, you know, I still got guns and whatnot.
There you go.
But it's not like what it used to be. I used to have, like, cuts and everything like that. But guess what? I'm almost 50. I'm fighting two things, right? fat assness and old assness. So, you know,
we're both there with you, brother.
Yeah. And, you know, even though, you know, you're an athlete, you get paid all this money, it's inevitable. You have to deal with all of that. And, you know, when I, what I mentioned earlier before about the age, you know, James Harden is 32, which is young, but for an athlete, that's old. And he came out, you know, after 1 year of college, so he has a lot of NBA miles on him.
Yeah. People don't realize the human body stops growing internally right around 27, 28. But from there, it's a downhill slide once you peak there. And it seems to me that, well, so before we go to Ben Simmons, and with Harden going to Philadelphia, do you see him having the attitude to rekindle his old play from Houston? Because he's what, 12-year veteran, 13-year veteran? He's his 13th year, I think, right around there. So can he regain that lost magic and bring home a championship? Because remember, on paper, everything looks great for both the Nets and the Sixers, but you still got to play.
Right. Well, let's think about this, right? So when we were younger and we weren't, you know, locked up, you know, and handcuffed and married is what I'm saying. And you were dating, right? So you broke up with the girl. But then you got this new girl, right? What was the feeling that you had? You felt rejuvenated. You're like, oh, my God. You know, James Harden's feeling the same way. I think he's going to be gangbusters once again this season, you know, for Philadelphia, which is why I think they're probably going to go pretty far.
What about his before we move, the final question before moving to Ben Simmons. All reports, and if you look at his final game there with the Nets, it looks like he quit. I mean, how does that hurt his reputation? And it doesn't really matter with the rest of the NBA, even though it does. But to his teammates on the 76ers, how are they going to view that? They're not going to care, you think, based on his performance or what?
They're not gonna care at all. The real damage for that will be his legacy, because there's going to be a lot of plays where you see James Harden just dogging it on defense, and you'll see all these great offensive, you know, nights where he scores like 50 or whatever, you know, 3 points, step back, you know, taking through the hole. But then his detractors, and there are always detractors and haters, they're going to say, oh, yeah, but look at him on defense. So if anything, that hurts his legacy there. Although, you know, he's minted as one of the best offensive players in NBA history. So,
but you know. See, you right there kind of limit him right there. One of the greatest offensive players. It's kind of like, I'm not saying you, but that's what's going to happen. And real quick, before we go to Ben Simmons, one comment on Kyrie Irving. Do you find it unjust that he can't play his home games, but unvaxxed players from the visiting teams can?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It makes no sense. You know what I mean? I'm not a politician, nor do I want to be, but, you know, yeah, there you go. It makes no logical sense. Like, you know, let's just think logically. It's like, you know, it's all or nothing. You know, these unvaccinated players can't play, or unvaccinated players in your state can, you know. It's kind of dumb.
Yeah, you're on the Del Pilar bandwagon there. It's BS. Yeah. When I learned that, I was like, are you kidding me? And my first thought process is take him to court, but with the rules, with the contracts they sign and the unions, that's next to impossible. But it just seems completely unfair, not only to Irving, but to the team and the fans, because Irving is taking a lot of heat. You know, and for me, I look at all those NBA players. I'm sorry, I'm getting off topic here, but I just got to say this. These are young, virile men in their physical prime. The odds statistically of them getting COVID and dying from it is slim to none. And we act as if COVID's going to kill everything it touches. Now, when you're a big boy, you're like a COVID happy meal. But these athletes are far from that. Big John, any comments on that?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the NBA, out of all the sports leagues, probably suffered the most from COVID, like especially when it first hit, right? They canceled a bunch of games. Their schedule, I mean, talk to me and Dennis over at Nerd Fantasy Sports, constantly having to redo the stats, redo the projections because the games were canceled and they were rearranged, you know. So they suffered a lot. They lost a lot of revenue because of that. Now, to that extent, I understand why they demand sort of vaccination and they're pushing it. I get it. But at the same time, the New York restrictions are ridiculous. And it, like, even someone like me that's pro-vaccination, Even Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, came out and said, I think this week, he said, look, it just doesn't make sense. We need some clarity here, right? Like, so right. An unvaccinated player from another part of the country where it's not mandated in his home state, he comes to Brooklyn, he goes to Madison Square Garden, he goes to the Barclays Center, he can play.
Exactly.
But Kyrie Irving, playing right next to him, can't play in his home game. Right. So it's kind of nonsense, right? So I agree with you guys there that it's inconsistent, and it's really on New York. I view it as less an NBA issue and more a New York issue. So hopefully this new mayor that they have in New York City, Adams, maybe he's a Nets fan and he wants to see Kyrie on the court. Maybe he'll change the mandates. But
don't hold your breath. The guy's talking about vegetarian as people are murdered in his city. Come on now.
Well, I think one of the rumors is they're getting a new health commissioner the beginning of the next month, and that Adams is waiting for that new health commissioner before he actually does change the rule.
You're talking about a health commissioner for New York City or something.
Right, for New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
So when that happens, we'll see what happens.
You know, probably one of your relative of the mayor.
One of the things with the Nets where people were saying, well, why don't you just pay the fine then, you know, for Kyrie Irving to play? Because, you know, that's the most that would happen. But there was a lot of kickback from the league saying, no, you cannot break your state's rules or your city's rules. But now with Adam Silver saying it's a dumb rule, maybe the NBA will be like, okay, just pay the fine. We'll let him play. But, you know, we're not going to like hold it against you.
That's a big thank you to the fans and the citizens who are finally rising up. I mean, you watch the Super Bowl. There's a stadium of, what, 85,000 people with no masks, including all the elites who demand masks be worn, going maskless. And I think people see that and they're going enough. And that's emboldening so people in businesses where it, like basketball, where it hurts them. So hopefully that will change. All right. Talk to us about Ben Simmons, a little bit about his background. In fact, he gave his first press conference or spoke to the media for the first time, I think, in about a year. From what I've read about him, he was a head case, a little bit nuts out there, but expound on that for some of our political friends here who aren't too familiar with Simmons in Philadelphia. Well,
I wouldn't say that he's a head case. You know, it's like, you know, mental health, you don't know what someone else is going
through. So he has mental health issues?
I mean, that's what they're saying.
Gotcha. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. No, that's been a while. You know, that's been known. And, you know, I'm not surprised that he does. One, because he's kind of – now he's playing for my team. I'm a Brooklyn Nets fan. I'll say that. But, you know – He's kind of soft, and not because of his mental health. He's just soft on the court. So that means he's not producing. For example, the reason why this all blew up with Philadelphia was, you know, in the playoffs, he could have won a game by taking the ball and actually dunking it. And he had every opportunity to. There's, like, no defenders ready to, you know, challenge a shot. But instead of going for the dunk, he actually passed it outside.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of people were like, yeah, what the, you know, and Joel Embiid called him out on it. Doc Rivers basically blamed him for the loss. And, you know, that's just what set off.
Well, that's when it all started, right, with Simmons in Philly. And we know how Philadelphia fans can be.
Oh, man.
And they're not buying any of it. Like, when you talk about he may or may not have mental health issues, as you said, I don't know if they're, quote, legitimate or not. I leave that to others. But in the minds of those Philly sports talk fans, man, it was all a hoax, you know, that Ben Simmons faked mental health issues so he could get out of Philly and force their hand with the trade. And, look, I agree with you. He comes off as soft. As good a defender as he is, he's not the, like, Lambeer, Rodman, bad boy defender, right? He's not that type of defender. But you know, you were talking about Michael Jordan and what made him great. He was a killer on the court.
Yes.
He didn't care who was in front. His mama could have been he would have posterized his mama if he thought it would get him a ring, right? He took no mercy on the court. He talked trash. He, to put it plainly, he was a big old SOB on the court.
You know, all the greats are like that.
Yeah, Isaiah I don't Thomas, disagree.
Larry right. Bird, Michael Jackson.
Well, Larry Bird was one of the worst, right, in terms of that. But when you see someone like Simmons, where, like, instead of driving to the hoop and saying, give me the ball at the right time, he, like you said, Dennis, he decided to pass it off. That does not play well with teammates. That doesn't play well with fans. And maybe, just maybe, he needed that fresh start. Whether, like, I don't know whether he, quote-unquote, faked any issues to get out of Philly. But I don't know. Do you think it was a put-on, or do you think he just sincerely had trouble getting back on the court? Because a lot of athletes have that, right? If you look at Calvin Ridley for the Falcons in the NFL, he basically canceled out his entire season due to mental health issues. And he came out and said, I have to work on my, you know, Everson Griffin in Minnesota had severe issues that apparently the team knew about. He locked himself in his house and started shooting at phantom intruders. So on a larger scale, I would ask Dennis and maybe also William for you to chime in. What is our – why do we think this is happening now? Is it a conditioning that we say, well, you should have, to some extent, some mental issues or mental health issues? Is it that we're creating, like, if we took it from some people's point of view, are we creating softer athletes that just can't handle the mental grind anymore? Is it COVID? Is it a lot of different – like, do you have any sort of – gut feeling about that?
Well, when it comes to Simmons, I will say for years it's been a battle between him and Joel Embiid for this is my team.
Right.
Obviously, it's Embiid's team. I don't think it would ever have been Simmons' team, but Simmons thought that it could be his team. And then last year with the problem, you know, in the playoffs, it just amplified, right? Oh, you know, he didn't go in for the dunk. He passed the ball. You know, that just made it worse. So considering all that stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if his mental health is legitimately, you know, disabled or whatever you want
impacted.
To say. Impacted. There you go. But you know, again, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, I wouldn't make fun of anyone that had, like, legitimate problems.
It's not – yeah, we're not – the Philly fans make fun. Let's be clear. I'm saying, like, the Philly – and these are the ones who famously attacked Santa Claus in the Central
States. Right. And then they defended by saying Santa Claus was a drug.
Right. And didn't they also cheer when Michael Irvin, had his career ended at Veterans Stadium? So, I mean, the tough crowd in Philly.
Oh, true.
But look, when you're talking about athletes at that level, as much as we knock them, because retired players and agents have told me this, never an active player, but retired players have told me we've never been told no. You know, in fact, in Houston, one of the anonymous sources for the Rockets said James Harden has never been told no. You know, so we always say that, but at the same time, they're under a lot of pressure with these monster contracts. They are playing a physical game every night. Their bodies get torn down. In war, it's PTSD. But what people don't realize, in our own lives, in our own minds, we all encounter PTSD through something traumatic. It may not be traumatic to somebody else, but it affects us that way. People may not remember Mark Wilson, a quarterback coming out of Brigham Young, played for the Raiders, was the next great thing. His record was like 11-2 on average. I mean, he's a winner. But he wasn't a leader. He got beat down, and he was never the same QB in the pros as he was in college.
Right.
David Carr, hold on.
I was going to say David Carr. That was the next example.
That offensive line, he was running for his life. And I know for a fact. We were told, man, he's been beaten down. He sees a body where there's no body coming at him now. And that kind of ended his career. Now, he's a great NFL analyst, so he's come back. But maybe Ben Simmons – something happened, but it culminated with not taking the dunk, and he has never been able to handle that pressure. And finally, Some people, as great a talent, they may have alpha dog talent, but they're not alpha dogs, and they're better suited for a number two role. Or it's kind of like Abbott and Costello. You know, you have the straight man and the comedic. You know, all the pressure was on Costello to make people laugh, and Abbott just played the straight man. Is that right? I think I'm getting right. But the point is, that's how I see Ben Simmons. He's soft-spoken. He does not, to me, have that alpha dog. If I'm a general manager, just look from the outside. Because inside is completely differently. I'm like, that's not who I want to bring in to be my Michael Jordan. Instead, he'll be my Steve Kerr or something like that. Does that make sense, gentlemen?
Yeah, man, that's a real insult to Ben Simmons by saying he's going to be Steve Kerr. But, you know.
Hey, how many rings does Steve Kerr have? At the end of the day, it's about championships, isn't it?
Right. But, you know, it's like not everybody can be Kobe Bryant. You know, when Kobe Bryant was drafted, basically it was Shaq's Lakers team.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, but Kobe was like, no, I'm going to be the man because he has that Michael Jordan, you know, dog mentality. So that's why they feuded. And, you know, there's this story where one time Kobe Bryant was just like destroying everybody in practice. And, you know, Shaq wasn't there yet. But when Shaq came in, his teammates were like, yo, Kobe's like being a real asshole. He's like not passing the ball. He just keeps attacking. So Shaq's like, all right, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So Shaq goes to Kobe, hey, Kobe, there's no I in team. And Kobe responded, but there's I in win, motherfucker.
But ironically, you know? Kobe didn't get a ring until Shaq showed up.
Well, I mean, or it could be the other way around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because Shaq had two losses in the finals before going there.
Right. But not even that. Kobe won two more with Shaq gone. You know, Shaq won another one with the Miami Heat, but that wasn't his team. That was Dwayne Wade's team. So
that was mercenaries for hire. When I think of mercenaries for hire.
No. That was before LeBron. Before Chris Bosh. Dwayne Wade won a ring where he led the team, and the second best player was Shaquille O'Neal.
You know what's interesting is when I think about it, back in the days of Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Patrick Ewing, Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde the Glide, those guys, right? None of those guys in the offseason ever got together and said, hey, let's pick a city where we're all going to sign with and we'll win a ring, right? Like what happened with Miami more recently, right? You know, like Bosh and those guys. And someone I was listening to said that's because back then each one of those guys wanted to prove that they were the man, right? So,
right. So
like Patrick Ewing wouldn't talk to Jordan and say, hey, man, either you sign with the Knicks or I'll sign with the Bulls and we'll never lose. You know why that never happened? Because Patrick Ewing would rather die than admit that Jordan had one up on him. Same thing with Larry Bird, right? But it seems like players today, with few exceptions, might be willing to settle for that, Dennis. Don't you think that, like, hey, why don't the three of us get together and no one can beat us? And
right.
I don't ever – do you remember that happening, say, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, you know, guys, it was different too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, back in the day, you know, they weren't really friends. They weren't hanging out. You know what I mean? Nowadays, like, everybody's friends with LeBron. You know? No, seriously. Everybody loves LeBron, and, you know, no one's really trying to kill him like that, you know? You know, back then, Michael Jordan – he would, like, destroy you if you played ping pong with him. You know what I mean? It was just that competitive. You know, it's a totally different era. It's a lot, you know, I hate to say it because it sounds like that old man saying, get off my lawn.
Right.
But nowadays, just players are just, like, kind of soft, and they want to be validated, and they want to be liked. No, it's true. You know, it's like, it's a social media world where it's like, how many likes can I get? How many comments can I get? You know what I mean? How many followers can I get? Whereas back in the day, it was like, who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? I don't need to be liked. I just need rings.
Right. Exactly. And gentlemen, I apologize. Actually, Kobe was on the Lakers team when they beat the Magic, I think, in the finals.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, there's other great players in regards to that. Sean Kemp, Dominique Wilkins, you know, I don't think they won championships, but I could be wrong, but they were part of that group too, in the sense they were superstars in their own right. Different era, different type of players, more alpha dog mentality where they could carry, you know, some of those teams with these players who didn't have championships, it's because they were the team, you know? The one thing we forget about the Celtics, the Bulls, the Pistons, the Lakers, they had teams, you know? Because as you said, which I said, there's no I in team, you know? At the end of the day, it's a team sport still, and you still need a team around you to win it all. But to me, that also, it saddens me because it shows the greatness of those players. I mean, Dominique Wilkins with the Hawks, I believe, the Atlanta Hawks, you know, he was so dominant, and Sean Kemp could literally take over a game. See, that's when I watched basketball. Basketball turned me off.
When he wasn't making babies, you mean?
Yeah. But basketball started to turn me off when, in my opinion, the NBA looked the other way to allow Shaq to go play for the Magic with the tampering. And then I'm watching the Portland series. I'm watching Shaq barreling down, literally like Ferdinand the Bull, just knocking players over. And there's the ref. And then doesn't call anything. I'm like, come on, ref. I know the league's probably said, it's good for basketball if the Lakers make the finals. But it just turned me off so much. I kind of turned the channel off for many years from basketball because of that. But at the end of the day, I look at Shaq and Kobe as some of the last great players, because that was before cable really took over. Because now with cable, everything's so fragmented. As great as James Harden is, half the people don't know who he is because television has been so fragmented compared to the old days. Yeah. So real quick then, you kind of hinted at it. For the audience, you're a Brooklyn fan. But there could be, both teams could be winners. But at the end of the day, who do you see out of those two teams getting the better end for this year? Because I would imagine both teams still look at a championship this year as a viability.
Oh, yeah. I think, being a realist for this year, the Sixers – they will definitely go further than the Nets, but if I had to choose who would win the NBA Finals, I'm still going with the Milwaukee Bucks to repeat. So, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, Sixers or Nets, because I think the Bucks will take it, only because they are a team. If you look at every NBA Finals, you know, winning team, you can say they're all super teams, because you need at least, you know, two superstars and great role players. You know, it's very rare where a championship-winning team does not have a superstar, you know, or two superstars. The only ones that come to mind are the Detroit Pistons, when they had Chauncey Billups, not a superstar, Richard Hamilton, not a superstar, Rasheed Wallace, not a superstar, Ben Wallace, not a superstar. And when Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks beat the Heat that first year, when LeBron and, as you say, the mercenaries came – and the Mavericks beat them because you only had one superstar, Dirk Nowitzki, and then everybody else is a role player. So, but if you look at every single team, the Showtime Lakers, Magic, Kareem, James Worthy, superstars. You look at, you know, the Detroit Pistons, Isaiah Thomas, superstar. Joe Dumars, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, stars. You go Celtics, Kevin McHale, Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, superstars. Ainge, great role player. Like, every single team has at least two superstars or one superstar and a collection and one or two stars and then a collection of role players.
Except for Showtime. I haven't seen the miniseries that's coming out, but I mean, that was my era as a kid, loving, I mean, Magic Johnson, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. There was a team of superstars there. James Worthy. Even though I don't think Worthy actually was as good as the legends want to make him out to be, he was still his own star in his own right. Well, those Celtics and Lakers, people probably don't remember this, but in the regular season, they were ratings like it was finals, playoff time between those two teams. It was incredible to watch them, fun to watch them, because you're right. Larry Bird, we never saw it, but then you read about it. He was a bleep talking MF-er, you know, on the court.
Yeah.
You
know? So, I was going to ask Dennis one more thing before we let him go. But one of the thing is, as always, I'm also interested in winning a little money, Dennis. So I'm going to lean on your expertise here. The odds for NBA MVP, okay?
Uh-huh.
Joel Embiid, your boy there,
is the not odds, my boy.
Is the odds-on favorite, all right, at plus 125. We've got Jokic at plus 325. You've got a fellow Greek of mine, Giannis, over there at plus 375. Curry at plus 800. Who would you put a couple of bucks on?
I mean, Embiid's going to win.
You think Embiid's got it locked?
Yeah, it's almost no. I mean, with 20 games left, he has to get injured for him not to win it. Or you need a James Harden, you know, crying session for him not to win it. You know, so Joel Embiid's going to win.
Who's a dark horse? Who's a long shot?
John Morant. Memphis.
John Morant. Okay, so John Morant, I'm quickly looking at the odds right here. John Morant is coming off at plus 1,200 or 12-1 odds.
Yeah.
So I guess if some people wanted to layer their bets, you're saying put some money on Joel Embiid, safe money to win the MVP. Mm-hmm. And then if you feel like taking a shot, put maybe like hedge it a bit with John Morant at plus 1,200.
Oh, yeah, especially if the Memphis Grizzlies keep winning. You know, post All-Star break, you know, they can all come back, you know, healthy. John Morant, he's going to be right up there with Joel Embiid for sure.
Fair enough. Hey, William, I'll give you the chance to interrogate Dennis before we let him go.
Well, Dennis, we're going to bring you back on, and I want to talk a bit more in-depth on the NBA and China issue. I believe they're hypocrites because at the end of the day, the only color that matters to most people who are rich already is the color green. But that's a topic for another day. However, I wanted to get your take on Woj and Brian Windhorst. Brian Windhorst seemed to have had this trade peg from day one, whereas Woj was backtracking, trying to save egg from his face when the trade did go down, saying, oh, they're talking trade now. I don't buy that because you don't make a trade like that just overnight. That's got to be talked through with the players, contracts, issues, etc. What's your take? Did Woj end up having egg on his face, or did Windhorst get lucky? And what was Dennis Velasco's original take? Did he see a trade coming down?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I was talking to some other, like, you know, Nets fans and, you know, actual Nets writers. And I was like, this trade needs to happen. And it's going to happen. Only because you can see in James Harden's body language, he did not want to be there. And for me, I was thinking more about, okay, he's an unrestricted free agent. If you're taking a chance that he's going to re-sign. So now that he's with the Sixers and he's already opted into his next year's contract, after that, the reason why trade for James Harden, because you're going to sign him to Supermax. So 32 this year, 33 next year. You sign him to Supermax. So when he's 37, 38 years old, you're paying that guy $62 million on that Supermax contract. Makes no sense. I didn't want the Nets to do that. I'm glad the trade happened. So did I call it? I don't know if I called it. I was calling for it. that's for sure. And as far as, like, you know, Windhorst and Woj or Wojnarowski, Woj basically was speaking for Sean Marks, because apparently, and, you know, the rumor is that Sean Marks, you know, at one point, yeah, he was thinking about the trade, but then he said, no, I don't want to do the trade. And that's when Woj said, oh, no, a trade's not happening, because that's what he was hearing from Sean Marks. Windhorst or Windy, he was probably, you know, talking to Daryl Morey, who's, you know, head of basketball operations for the Sixers. So it was more about who's leaking what and to whom, you know, in this case, Windy and Woj. So when the deal was going to go down, the reason why you had that 180 from Woj was because Sean Marks was saying, okay, we are actually going to trade him. So I don't know if you can say that they're battling against each other, like this internal ESPN battle.
Well, actually, they fight for those scoops because that means more money come contract time. So, and Woj has said, I mean, he's seen as the, what's the term here, John? He's seen as the standard.
The dean of NBA reporting. Yeah.
Yeah. I would disagree with that. I think the guy, I mean, he's actually broken lately a lot more than Woj is Shams Charania from the Athletic.
But he's the up and comer. Woj is still
I would say he's on.
This kid's like Mike Tyson, up and coming.
As far as breaking news goes, I would definitely put Shams right up there with Woj, if not above him. because he breaks a lot of stuff.
And for the audience, I can tell you directly, and we talked about this before, is what makes him impressive is Woj has ESPN. So when Woj calls, the water boy's going to call. Everybody's going to call him back. So what this other kid's done is to build his own connections through his own hard work. And that's what I find impressive. To me, as I've talked about, that is greatness.
Right. You know? Well, you know, we can't discount how great actually Woj is. I mean, he put
in a lot of work
before that.
We're not discounting it, but there's no discounting the power of having ESPN behind you.
But he wasn't always with ESPN. You know, he wasn't always with ESPN. I mean, I remember him because he's a Jersey writer. Mm-hmm. He actually wrote one of my favorite books, The Miracle of St. Anthony, about, you know, Bob Hurley Sr. So I remember Woj before ESPN. He's obviously worked to that point. But, yes, his job is a lot easier nowadays because of those four letters.
Oh, yeah, they have to work hard to get there. I've known some reporters who have when Schefter got the job over at NFL Network, I knew reporters just as good as him. But Schefter had the face, the look, the personality compared to the two or three other guys that I knew who were more better informed. The reason I knew that is when I would talk to them, they'd get angry because certain insiders would call him to pick their brains. And there was a bit of jealousy there. He's like, man, I'm doing all the work and this guy's getting all the credit in the contract. And my take, well, I didn't say a word there. I didn't want to piss off my guy who I was getting info from, but I was like, that's life, you know, Matthew Berry's a fantasy guy. Yeah, Big John and I are sitting here. Of course, we never tried. I never tried for that type of stuff. It was always about the company first. But he saw his shtick, ran with it. And you give Woj credit for that. And that's who Win, as much as I was trying to play mock just now, Windhorse would love to be seen as a Woj, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this explains why I'm not a big-time NBA reporter. I don't have the face. I might have the hair. But I don't have the face.
No, you got the face. You got the personality.
You got the guns, brother. You got the guns. Show off them guns again.
Yeah, you got the
guns. Oh, yeah.
Something for the ladies. There you go. All right.
Dennis,
as always, it was great having you on to talk some hoops. And we're going to have you on regularly through the course of our podcasting. So for the folks out there, if you want to read more, from Dennis and his staff of NBA writers, of whom I hear someone tell me there's a little bloodline going on over with the Velascos now, right?
Oh, yeah. He's going to be better than me, man.
Go ahead, man. Be proud on that kid of yours.
So my son, Holden Velasco, you know, he's been writing about the NBA, even for Hollywood and Hollywood, you know, ever since, you know, he was young. He's writing now for Nets Daily. He's interning at Slam, which is the Bible of basketball. And, you know, as a comparison, Slam is to basketball as Vogue is to fashion. So, you know, it's a big deal. He recently had some articles published on Slam. So, you know, very proud of him. And, you know, the goal for your children is always to be better than you. So, better than me.
I agree. And you know, just for everybody out there, I've worked with Holden a little bit. He's a great kid, takes after his old man, works hard. He's not one of these like gimme kids. He goes out and he hustles for everything. He knows how to work hard, and you could tell he was raised right by his daddy. So good for
you. Big congrats on that.
And big congrats on that. And you know what? We'll talk to you soon, brother.
See you guys.
All right.
Appreciate you.
All right. So there's Dennis Velasco, and William, I'll let you take it from there.
Well, it was great to have Dennis, and we're going to bring him around for the playoffs to give us some insight. John and I are football guys. I'm a football, baseball, and a couple of other sports. As I said, I kind of tuned out NBA. I got back into it because of work, but it's a grind. And having somebody like Dennis to come here and give us the intricacies of trades, how he sees things. I mean, obviously he's written for Slam before, and works for you now. So it's good to have. And I think we're going to sit there and call it a night. But first of all, I'd like for everybody who watches this, make sure you check us out on Facebook at Sports Grumblings Com on Facebook. Feel free to comment there. We're going to be posting our podcast and our site's being wrapped up in development and being built. When I approached John about doing this, it wasn't a spur of the moment thing, but you know, we're old. So it was back and forth. And John has a hell of an agent. Had to get through that person. You know, what's your name? So with that, we will see you next time, and everybody take care and be safe out there.
That's right. Everyone, check us out again next week. William Del Pilar, as I've learned not to properly roll my R's like an authentic Latino. Wait, Latino? Latinx?
William, oh, my God.
What is it, William?
No. The only people who believe in that Latinx are the white people who put the name on Latinos.
So you're telling me no self-respecting Latino ever uses the word Latinx to refer to themselves?
Yes, I do. But on the serious side, 95% of Latinos do not like that. So that alone says something, you know. It's like, look, stop trying to classify us. We're not all short and brown. Some of us are short like me and look like me. So, in fact, look at you. You've got darker skin than I do.
Oh, yeah. I in my younger days, people passed me for an Arab. I used to get frisked all the time at airports. It's that olive complexion that I used to have and still have to some extent. But
there's an industry insider who is Jewish, and I used to always tease him, dude, they're gonna stop you at the freaking airline there for being a terrorist. And he'd look,
Well, you know, it's funny, but you know, it's a big thing around here. And like, you and I come from cosmopolitan areas, if we want to refer to them that way, urban areas.
Yeah, and if I'm a But we're also old school where we can make fun of things like this.
Oh, sure.
Right now, somebody's getting triggered.
Somebody's losing their mind right now.
Yeah,
someone listening to Points on the Board tonight is going to be like, how dare they say something about Latinx? That's we're trying to be inclusive with that. Well, you know, maybe some people don't want to be part of the board. You know what I'm talking about? Maybe
95 out of 100 people don't want to be.
Yeah, maybe some people prefer to see themselves as individuals and not part of a collective.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you.
I despise terms like Latinx, even though it doesn't affect me personally, right? Mm-hmm. I despise Latinx, William. I despise things that'll be like anything that makes you part of an identity group beyond your individual traits. I hate that sort of thing. So, like, I have no problem if you come up to me and say, you're a nerd.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look.
You're a nerd,
it's our job.
Right?
We take that proudly now.
We take that proudly because that's what we are. It's a trait of ours. But, like, I don't want to be, you know, like, I didn't vote for Michael Dukakis because I'm Greek. I didn't vote for anybody else because I'm Greek or they're Greek or anything else, right? I would assume it's the same with you. You don't knee-jerk vote for Latinos.
Oh my God, I hear
Latinos.
I hear it from Republicans here in San Diego County because I'm not a fan of the state party chair who's Latina. And they're shocked that I'm not because she's Latina. And they assume I'm in love. I'm like, no, I look at her policies. What's she doing to help us? And not us as a people, but help the Republican Party because we are a socialist democratic state out here. And I don't say that derogatorily. I say it as fact.
Right.
The Board of Supervisors in the recall election up in San Francisco listened himself a board supervisor member as a socialist Democrat. It's like so they get shocked that I don't go on board just because somebody's of the same culture.
Right.
I'm like, I don't care if you're white, black, green, whatever. I want to know your values and if they align with my values. And that is opportunity for every American. And with that, John, I think we should call it a night. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. So again, everyone, thank you for joining us on this episode of Points on the Board. Join us again next week when we'll be back with more stuff.